What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sorry, but we just come from the master class, and oh, we're a bit tired. That's why. Ah, sì. Okay, so we'll do it in English, okay? No problem? Yes, okay. Again, thank you for being here, and thank you for following this panel, and mostly it's an interview, and I hope I'll have interesting questions for you, have prepared something. I would like to introduce, I did it again yesterday, I did it before when we had the panel with Claude yesterday, but just as a reminder, let's say that I've come across the work of Rich Larson because actually he came to me because he's published in all the major year's best science fiction anthology, so it was impossible not to read his stories. But I like them. I like them very much. I think Rich is one of the most interesting authors, new authors coming in the next in these years and in the next years, and it's not just me saying that, but he's been defined like this by Gardner Dozois, which is a long-time anthologies and editor, editor of anthologies. So you have a very good blessing. So it's up to you now to keep up these expectations.
No pressure.
big pressures. So Rich, has written mostly science fiction, and he just started to write a novel, his first novel that will come out late this year. But he is most known for his short stories, and also your short story anthology will be out also this year. So it's a great year, right?
Yeah, it's a really big year for me. My first novel, like Francesco said, is coming out in July. It's called Annex, and it's an alien invasion book, kind of like Animorphs, but darker. And then following that in October, I have my first short story collection, Tomorrow Factory, coming out with Talos Press. So it's a busy year.
So talking about short stories, for many years, the short stories have been considered less important than novels. However, since its birth in the 20s, in the 30s of the last century, science fiction has often been published in the short form, as it is indeed a narrative of ideas with great success and appreciation. Today, there are more possibilities to publish short stories than novels, actually. Then what is the substantial difference between a science fiction short story and a novel, if it exists?
I think that science fiction lends itself to short stories in a lot of ways. I think they're a really good match. For me, the reason I prefer to write short stories rather than novels is that I have a lot of ideas. And so with short fiction, I can jump from one idea to the next to the next. Whereas if I'm writing a novel, I have to have one idea that I really love because I'm going to be stuck with it for 6 months.
Yeah, but also the fact that you can have sub-ideas, you know, also let's say one way to define science fiction is also counting the number of ideas, right, in the page. The ideas per page index. So, in a way, it's not just the fact that you can change from one idea to the other, but you can have sub-ideas in the same context. Or you really want to have different approach, or the novel keeps you too much on one thing, one subject.
Well, sometimes you have ideas that contradict each other or that wouldn't work in the same universe. And so with short stories, you can have radically different visions of the future, one after another. Whereas with the novel, you need to have one cohesive vision. And also with the short story, you can just focus in on one little thing, like one new piece of technology, and make that the center of everything. Whereas with a novel, you have to have a lot more meat. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In a time when self-publishing and online publishing is growing, does it make sense for an emerging or even an established writer to write short stories and novellas? Or and for a reader, is it useful to read them with respect to the novel, also considering the narrowing of attention span to be devoted to reading?
Well, I'll talk about self-publishing first, because I recently got very exciting news. I'm getting my first royalty check from my self-published collection from like 6 years ago. So I'm getting $112. So self-publishing is maybe not the way to go. In terms of, you were saying, is it still worth it to write short fiction? For me, I've managed to make a living for a couple years doing just short fiction, but it's not easy. You have to produce a lot of work, and you have to produce it quickly, and you have to have editors who are ready to take it pretty much as is. And also, you know, I live a very basic lifestyle. My main hobby is writing. So my main hobby is my income, and I don't have to take care of a family or a house or anything like that. So I think for grown-ups, writing short fiction is not a good career choice.
So now we're going into a kind of the age limitation or something. So short stories are for young people.
Short stories are for people who can live a really cheap lifestyle and have a lot of time on their hands to write, I guess.
So you end up writing novels in the future, or you will always stay like that?
I definitely prefer to write short stories. Now I'm stuck writing novels, but it's because the novel money is much better than short story money.
But how do you handle? Is it also that you have more freedom with the short stories in the sense that, for example, a novel is more engaging for both the reader and the publisher, so they probably want to have a better grip on that editing, changing the cover, all these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Like writing short stories and selling to short story editors spoiled me like crazy, because I thought that kind of creative freedom and the really light touch, I thought that was par for the course. But then when you sell a book to like a decently sized publisher, all of a sudden it's our book. It's not your book anymore. And so they're doing what they think they need to do to market it. They're putting the money into marketing. So it's kind of out of your hands. They do their thing and hopefully they do it well.
So you feel more attached to your short stories than the novel, or not? No, maybe this is not the right question, because the publisher might not like it.
Okay, well, nobody tell the publisher. But I'm definitely more excited for the short fiction collection, because I feel like that's personal for me. It's all the stories that I've written throughout the various stages of my career so far, the ones that I thought were most important, the ones that I thought were maybe overlooked. Four of them are in here, because this also has my best stuff. The novel will be neat, because I've always dreamed of having a novel, but the short story collection will have priority on my shelf.
Okay. This panel is about really short stories and writing and publishing short stories. So I'm also interested in the process of selecting short stories. Is it different from that of the novels for the publishing houses? What are the criteria used by an editor in choosing an online short fiction to be published every month, for example?
Right. I started submitting short science fiction, I think, in 2011. And everything I've done has been online through, you know, the Moshka or Submittable forms. It's very streamlined and it's easy. But the flip side of that is that these magazines receive tons and tons of submissions. So every month, editors are just wading through the slush pile, trying to find the good ones and pull them out. So for me, breaking into the big markets was a really long process.
How did it happen? How many submissions did you have to do before getting the first one?
I think when I started out, I averaged like 15 to 20 rejections for every acceptance. And one magazine in particular, Clark's World, I sent them 37 stories before they accepted one.
37?
37. Yeah, and most of those went on to be published in other professional magazines, but Neil Clark is finicky.
Yeah, Neil Clark. Wow. Okay, yes, talking about Neil Clark, I was talking to him, and he revealed to me that he got tired of reading stories of zombies and vampires, etc., in the usual post-apocalyptic scenario. So my question is, which are, in your opinion, the over-abused themes to avoid and in this period, and why? And then which themes are more likely to be accepted in magazines?
I honestly think that you can sneak any theme into a magazine. Even when editors say they don't want something, I always kind of take it as a challenge not to like defiantly send them that, but to make it so sneaky they don't even notice. Like, for example, Sheila Williams of Asimov's, she hates anything related to cannibalism. And so for a long time, I would try to just sneak in tiny little references into my Asimov stories, and she would always ferret them out. She was very, very astute about that. And I'm sure I've sent stuff to Clark's World that is at least zombie-like, but the word zombie just never appears.
And for the themes that you think are, you know, good at the moment, the things that could be interesting, looking at the trends, the actual trends in science fiction.
Yeah, I think the things resonating right now in short fiction, a lot of it is a more international perspective. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of markets are more interested in translations now and getting work from non-English writers. As far as general themes go, we talked about this a little earlier. Climate fiction is a big one. So looking at the possibilities of natural disaster, either wiping us out or letting us build something better.
So you mean it in the usual catastrophic way?
I think it kind of goes two ways now. People still are writing the catastrophic climate fiction, but people are also writing the more positive stuff, like the solar punk type style, where instead it's looking at what's the best case scenario. If we manage to, you know, handle our shit and turn to renewable energy and improved social policies, then how could we make things actually better instead of just scaring people with how bad it could be?
Yeah. Okay. My next question is really about the short fiction market. So how much do online magazines pay? And are there any payment and value ranges?
Yeah, it varies a lot. Like for me, when I was starting out, I kind of had a list of all the magazines that I wanted to be published in. And then as I started submitting and looking at the magazines, I reshuffled my list. So the highest paying one was always at the top and then worked down from there. For a long time, the white whale was Tor.com because they pay 25 cents a word. And they've been like open and closed to submissions. I think right now they don't take unsolicited. And so that's where networking comes in. You have to get somebody's business card. But right underneath Tor.com, there's Clark's World. And the reason why I sent them 37 stories is that I wanted that Clark's World money. So they do 10 cents. Some of the older magazines have a range that they'll kind of slide you up or down depending on if you're a regular contributor. So like Analog and Asimov's, they'll go from 7 to 9. And maybe if you win a big award, they'll give you 10. I don't know. I don't get 10 from them.
Okay. And what about the non-American magazines? Have you been published also?
Yeah, I've been a regular in Interzone for a long time because the editor, he really vibes with my stuff, and I like him a lot, and I like the art that they get. The payment isn't great, but it's more just being in Interzone and getting exposure elsewhere because it is a UK magazine instead of American.
And so do you adapt your writing to these magazines, or your writing comes ahead of these, you know, it's first?
I think I always go through my hierarchy of trying to get paid, but oftentimes in the back of my mind, I think, okay, it's going to fall to this magazine and they will take it because it's their kind of story. I know, for example, writing for Asimov's, if I write anything even remotely funny, she'll want it because she really likes the stories that have compassion but also humor. I know that if I write something really dark or weird, Apex will go for it.
So it seems to me that you really have you're more concerned in a way or interested in the tastes of the editors than the readers. you have a steady relationship with all these people, so you're probably more paying more attention to their desires than following what the main reader might want to read.
Yeah, I think the best fans to have are editors.
Okay. That's a good strategy. Mm-hmm. And how are they? You probably know 5, 6, 7, 10, how many?
How many editors?
Yeah, how many editors do you have relations with?
I do breakfast with a few of them.
Okay.
But usually getting to know their tastes is also just getting to know the magazine. So if you want to know what they like, you read a few issues and figure it out.
Okay. So what are your preferred magazines? What magazines would you suggest to follow to be updated with the current science fiction trends?
I don't read as much science fiction as I should. I don't stay on top of the genre as well as I would like to. But for me, Lightspeed is a really good one. They have just a very nice, readable website, which is a huge plus. Definitely Clark's World. Tor.com always has the best art. Their stories are hit or miss for me. And I usually don't subscribe to any paper magazines because I move around too much and I don't know where they would end up.
Okay. Given all these stories you've published, do you have an agent?
Yes, I have an agent, but I only got them for the novel.
Oh, okay, that was my question indeed. The agents are not interested in short fiction.
No, like the short fiction collection that I have coming out, that was a publisher actually approaching me and asking if I was interested in doing that. So it wasn't a project that I proposed. It just kind of fell into place.
But given the number of translations you have and all the publication across the world, the agent is not interested in that, is not there.
He might be interested, but I don't want to give him a cut, so I just do it myself.
That was my curiosity. How do you deal with that? What's your strategy? Because I think you have to maximize your income if you do it as a job, and this is, you cannot take out any percentage from that. Is it worth, or would you better, go with the agent?
It's definitely worth having an agent if you are trying to sell a novel. But I think for short fiction, most of the contracts are pretty basic. It's stuff you can handle yourself. And the best way, I'm finding more and more, the best way to make money in short fiction is reprints and translation. It's getting paid for stuff you've already written over and over.
Yeah, and in fact, my curiosity is also into the secondary rights. Have you been selling for adaptation to audiobooks or films or series?
No, I mean, the dream is always to sell movie rights. And I've had some nibbles, but they've always gone nowhere. And that actually seems to be pretty common, is that studios employ people to just look for ideas everywhere. And so they'll kind of send out these wide, wide nets to look at novels or short fiction that's just out there in the world, just to kind of ping and say, hey, are these rights available? And then maybe 1% of those, they'll actually say, okay, we want to buy the rights. And then, 1% of those actually get realized and become a film or a TV series. So it's kind of like winning the lotto. But I figure by the more work you publish and put into the world, the more tickets you have.
Yeah, but if you apply the same strategy you had with short fiction to, you know, the TV series, I think you have very fair chances. Look at Ken Liu, for example. He's now in the process of adapting a lot of short stories into yeah, it's short movies or other movie thing.
Yeah, for me at this point, it's still a dream, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed that one of these days the film interest will turn into, you know, selling rights.
Okay. Well, I don't know what time we... It's just been... okay. Ooh. Then I wonder if you have any question. No, but okay. Va bene.
The first science fiction book I ever read was Sailing Bright Eternity by Gregory Benford. So it was this really hard science fiction book written by an author who was also a physicist. And I think I read it when I was like 7 or 8 years old, and it all just went right over my head. I couldn't understand any of it, but at the same time, I was just totally entranced, and I loved it. And science fiction kind of became my preferred genre as a kid. The idea of writing it came around because the local library where I lived had a short story contest every year. And so they wanted stories of 2,000 words on a particular theme. And there were cash prizes. And I always wanted to win that story contest. And so for me, writing was that. Writing was every year I would write 2,000 words about a theme and try to win this contest. And then eventually I just started writing anyways. And I was 19 when I decided to try writing a novel. And it ended up being a finalist for an Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award. This contest, I don't think it exists anymore. And so that was the event that made me realize I could do writing as a career. And at first I tried to write literary stuff, but then I remembered how much I loved science fiction as a kid, and I realized that I wanted to write science fiction and give people the same kind of experience that I got when I was a reader. The stories that went into this collection here, one of them I picked because it was just really well received. It was meshed in Clark's world, and I knew that people liked it a lot, and so I thought, I'll go with that. And then the other three were stories that I really liked, and I felt didn't get enough time in the limelight. There's a story in there that was in a small anthology of military science fiction, Ghost Girl. It's the titular story. And there was another one in a small young adult anthology, Your Own Way Back. And those were stories that I really loved, but I felt like I didn't get to share them with enough people. And so I thought, Italians, they'll like it.
Yeah, personally, I was looking for a particular setting, and I try to select stories that have an original setting. And in these stories, it's three of them are really these kind of stories for me. For example, Ghost Girl is set in Bujumbura, in Burundi, so I'm very interested in that. It's Africa, so not many stories are set in Africa and are written at the same time by somebody that has been living there. One of my next projects would be to have an Afrofuturism anthology in Italian, so I was very interested in that. The other one is Meshed, which is set on a basketball court, so it's quite original, and I'm always interested in the future of sports, and so I will publish Divya Srinivad Breed Runtime that was published on Tor. So next year we'll have this story that has to do with the future of running athletics. And the third one is Let's Do It Viral, which is partying on a spaceship, which could be an original setting. The way it is done, it's really, really original. So I really like that. While the fourth one was just, I think, a particularly nice story in regards to the problem of bullying. I like the fact that a kid could be saved by his grandfather while the others are bullying him. And this resonates a lot to me, especially because I have a 10-year daughter that is starting to have some formative problems. We all have been bullied, and I would like to publish this story in an anthology for children that I will do. This is just, I'm telling him now, an anthology that I will do this year, and this anthology is going to be out for the Roman Book Fair, and it will include 8 stories for young adults and children from the middle school to the high school. And so bullying is really a theme for them, and this is the perfect story. I have to decide also on the basketball story. That also very, very good for them. And we will have drawings by the students of the International School of Comics in Rome.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yes. So this is a project because I think that science fiction for children is very outdated. I think that if there are any science fiction thought at school, if there's any book, they always deal with space exploration, time travel, the alien, and these themes, though they could be, of course, interesting and important, are not representing the reality of the world where the children will live. So I've put in this book new themes like artificial intelligence, drones, clones, climate change. These things that are important for them. And in this way, I think that science fiction works very good also for alphabetization, for trying to introduce the people to the world where they live. And this is also important for me.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it will be in Italian, but as you know, I will go to China, and they are very interested in pedagogic science fiction. And I already will be editing an anthology for the high school in China. But unfortunately, your story came late, just like the Claude stories. But I, if this goes well, they will ask more of these stories. So be ready.
I'll be waiting.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Lately, my writing process is a mutual friend of me and Claude. My writing process is named Derek Kunskin, and he is extremely driven. And so we get up at like 6 a.m. and meet at a coffee shop that is not near to either of our houses. It's in the middle of nowhere to me, and write until around 1 p.m. And he's so productive that it's impossible for me to just sit there. So he makes me work. I'm not an outliner the way he is, definitely not. But I usually know kind of one scene in advance, and then I try to always have an ending in mind to work towards. Writer's block is definitely a thing, yeah. One thing that I like to do, right now I'm working on the novel almost full time. But when I'm just completely stuck on it, I switch over to a short story that I have in the works. And so I'm still writing, I'm still engaging the same creative muscles, but I'm doing it in a totally different universe. And I find that that helps, and it lets me go back to the novel later with more creative energy.
Okay. Any questions? All right, we might give you 8 minutes. Thank you very much.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia, da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it. Su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @Fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/Fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/FSC Community. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@Fantascientificast.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificas.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. Autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Allarme rosso, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Liberate l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigate.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì, mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
Blocco 7 è pronto.
Pronto, attivato.
Blocco 7 è posizionato.
Terrificante. Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.